This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have Ace Atkins. He is continuing the Robert B. Parker Spencer novels. And the newest one is called Wonderland, and it's just out from Putnam Publishing and all your bookstores now. Hello.
Hey, David. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
You're in Oxford, Mississippi.
I am sitting here right by the Oxford Square, and so deep within Mississippi.
You're writing these Spencer novels now, which I really enjoy this one. I mean, there's a lot of sarcasm, and I love the sarcasm.
That was a key, definitely, to Mr. Parker's style, and want to keep that edge to it.
Well, how does one even begin to carry on Robert Parker's legacy of the Spencer novels?
Well, you know, I don't think anyone ever could be Robert B. Parker. He was one of a kind and a towering figure, really, in the last 30 years in books, and somebody I admired greatly and somebody who I really wanted to be like, and how I got into crime fiction. But I do think I've got a very unique, direct feel for the character, and I definitely understand Spencer very well. And I've been reading these books for 30 years, and I love these books, and they are a core part of really who I am and what I write and what I like. And so I was extremely, extremely familiar with the character when the question was asked, you know, to submit some pages and to keep the Spencer legacy continuing.
Right. Now, this is the second one you've done?
Number two, yeah. Lullaby came out last year.
Lullaby. Now, I haven't read
Lullaby.
I'm sorry?
Lullaby and then Wonderland this year.
Right. Lullaby, I guess, is now in paperback by now.
Yep. It just came out. That's a good plug. Just came out in paperback.
Yeah. Now, Hawk is not in this one, Wonderland. Hawk is usually in the book. Why did you decide not to put him in this one?
Hawk's on. Hawk needed a vacation, I think. I also, you know, it's really just kind of keeping in the style of Mr. Parker's work. He, you know, routinely would take Hawk out of the series for a couple books. And I really think that was due to the impact of Hawk. I mean, Hawk is such a strong figure and such a loved character that when he does show up, you want it to have a major impact. And I think that if he's around for every book, he would not have the strong enough role that he does when he comes out. And so that's really what keeping within the style of Mr. Parker to have Hawk back for a book. And then I'm working on the new Spencer right now, and Hawk is certainly back. So it's just kind of a pacing thing.
So how you have a regular series with, I think it's Quinn Coulson. Is that the character name?
Yep, that's right. I do a series here set in the South. So kind of alternate between Boston and Mississippi.
So how hard is that to do? You're doing that once a year.
Twice a year. I don't write them, you know, simultaneously. They're two very distinct, separate projects, and I cannot write the two books at the same time. It would just become crazy because they're completely different. They're different in every kind of way. Not only the characters are different, and the dialogue and the feel and the setting and everything, but the main thing that's different is stylistically. My own personal style is very different from Mr. Parker's. And writing for Spencer, to keep that Spencer voice, you keep it in that style and that feel of the Spencer novels. So it's a challenge. I mean, in fact, in some ways, I think it's definitely more of a challenge than writing my own material, because I'm really constantly thinking, what would Mr. Parker be doing at this point? You know, how would he address the scene, as opposed to how would I address the scene would be possibly very different.
I really like the Z character. Now, his name is Sixkill. Is that a nickname?
Yeah, that's Z. His real name is Zebulon Sixkill, named after Zebulon Pike. And that was the last character that Parker created in his last Spencer novel. He had created a character who became Spencer's protege. And this is the first time he had ever done this in the series. And it really kind of had a feel about kind of passing the torch and Spencer bringing this new guy into the fold, who's this Cree Indian who had numerous problems and issues over the years, and Spencer helps him kind of get straight and get cleaned up and gives him a life path and a direction. And he was really going somewhere with this character. This was not a one-off character in any way when you read that last novel, that he was going to leave the Spencer cast of characters. And so I was not able to really continue that story in Lullaby because I had to really hit the ground running with a classic Spencer story and get Hawk back and really have some pressing things. But in this book is really a continuation of Mr. Parker's last book.
And I like the way they really kept the feel of the covers. I mean, you feel like this really would have been a Robert B. Parker cover with the. I mean, it just looks like one of the series, you know, because of the style of it.
Well, nobody can ever replace the great Robert B. Parker, and no one is really trying to do that. But there is a big demand among the readers for these series to continue, and for Spencer to continue. And the thing that I think was terrific for the readership and for his fans is that there was never a year without a Spencer book. Six Kill came out the following year, Lullaby came out this year, Wonderland came out. So this was not ever something where, say, in a series like James Bond, where years and years passed and then someone decides to bring the character back. This is something that just continued from his last book, and I think that's become kind of a special thing. And I think it's not lost upon the readers.
What's been the reader reaction so far to your two books? I'm curious what they're saying.
Well, you know, I think that I had really braced myself. You know, Parker was such a beloved author, and there was so much loyal readership to him that I think initially people were naturally skeptical, and I think people weren't sure what to make of it. And one of the things that I think has really helped as far as getting people just to read the books and to continue on has been the support of the Parker family. And of course, none of this would have ever happened if the Parker family had not wanted to see Spencer continue. But Joan Parker and I often do events in Boston. We did a book reading last week. We do radio and TV interviews together. This is the catalyst of Joan Parker and Mr. Parker's two sons, Dan and David, and to have this series continue. So that's really helped as far as, hey, if the Parkers are good with this, then we're good with this as well. But the fans have been great. They have been better than I could have ever imagined. I mean, I would not take a gig like this lightly, taking on Spencer. I mean, it's Spencer. You know, but they have been wonderful. And I was truly, honestly not expecting that. But the letters that I receive from people, the reviews have been really fantastic. It has been far beyond my expectations about having this being a really rewarding experience for me as an author. But it's I think, in a large part a tribute to Robert B. Parker and how much fans love his character.
Now, how difficult are these books to write? I mean, you sit down and you think, now I have to write the next Spencer. What happens? What comes into your mind? I mean, do these ideas just kind of take root, or does it take a while to think of the next idea?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that, you know, I mentioned earlier about you being just a huge Robert B. Parker fan, and, you know, my library is filled with every book that he ever wrote. And there's a way when you look at a Robert Parker book that it looks easy. It looks like there's just an effortless way that he wrote, and I think there probably was. I think that his writing style, I think that he had written so many novels, it became somewhat effortless for him, like a great athlete or a great painter or whatever. But that simplicity and that spareness of his dialogue, the spareness of his writing ability, it ain't easy. I mean, it is tough. And so getting that spareness and that leanness, I spend probably more of my time taking words away than actually adding them. I think he was very adept at just doing that simplicity on the page. But, you know, I might write a 10-page scene, and then I go back to it, and I make it a 5-page scene, and really lean it out. And he just, you know, he was a genius. He could nail that one sentence, that one, you know, a description that might take a lesser author 2 pages. Robert Parker could do it in one word. You know, it's like a name that tune. You know, he was just that kind of guy. nail it. And that's hard. That's hard, and I'm sure it takes me far longer to do that than it took Mr. Parker.
Is it difficult coming up with the sarcastic comments that Spencer always has? I love the things he says.
It is. I think it might take me several versions, to get that feel and that right quip right. But of course, Parker said famously, he's thought that part of the fan, love and adoration of Spencer as far as his quips was because Spencer could say things right at the moment that most people it took 5 or 10 minutes later to think about after you had an interaction with somebody. And I think that's true. I mean, Spencer comes up with that line that we wish we had, at that moment, God, why didn't I say that to that guy? Why didn't we have that comeback? But of course, being the writer, we had the luxury to mull it over and get a cup of coffee and walk around and come back and then write that one line.
Yeah, Spencer's got this. He takes a serious situation and always lightens the mood. I mean, he'll say something and make the other person feel totally like they're not that important. Like he's just being funny,
And I think that's the key to the books. I talk about this all the time. I've been on the road for the last 10 days supporting this book, and we talk about, what makes Spencer so special and why the longevity and why does he tower above all the other, hard-boiled characters and heroes out there. And I think it's the humor. And I think that's what Robert Parker brought to the table that other authors don't have. There's a lot of brooding thriller writers and, seriousness of tone and all that stuff, and he thought that was just crap. I mean, his outlook on life and everything and his humor, I think, is what made him extremely special.
Now, what are they doing with the audios? I'm curious who's doing Robert the voice of Spencer.
Well, for the last, I think it's been the last 20 years, it's been Joe Mantegna. And Joe continues to do the Spencer novels, which I love. I was such a Spencer fan that when there would be a new Spencer novel come out, I would buy it in hardcover, and then I would buy the audio, because I just love to hear Joe Mantegna's reading. And there had been numerous people years ago, I mean, I've been a Spencer fan forever, that had done the audio, including Burt Reynolds and some Broadway actors and this kind of thing. But there was always something missing about the rhythm and the pacing and the snappiness of the dialogue and everything. And Mantegna is genius. His timing and his sarcasm and his pauses and everything is just fantastic. And one of the real highlights of my career is after Lullaby was about to come out, I had a personal message sent from Mantegna, which you see Joe Mantegna in your outbox, and you think it's in your inbox, you think it's spam or something. And he said something like that he wasn't really sure that he wanted to continue this after Parker's death, but he said that he read Lullaby and really felt great about it, and he knew that I was keeping the style and the feel and honoring Robert B. Parker, and he said he'd be doing this as long as I would. And so I love hearing him read those books. It's just terrific.
It's got to be a scary moment. I hope he says something good. I hope he isn't mad that I'm...
Well, of course, he's Fat Tony in The Simpsons, so, you don't want to wake up with a horse head in your bed or something like that.
I think he also does Criminal Minds now, too.
Exactly.
One of those shows. I lose track sometimes who's on what show anymore.
one of the great actors, for sure.
I haven't heard the audios yet. I'd love to hear how the style of his voice, I mean, how it sounds in the sarcasm.
Well, I think there's two, people that love audiobooks, I think there's two different kinds of audiobooks. There's books where audio, books are read, and you have a reader, and then you have books that are actually performed by an actor. And the Mantegna's are definitely, the book is performed. It's almost like listening to a radio play, and it's fun. It's a whole different experience than reading. If you have not heard him read Spencer, try it out. He is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to find that and listen to it. Now, tell people about Wonderland. What it's about, where the idea came from.
Well, for me, it's very important. I mean, one of the questions, that I was asked when this came up is, how are you going to be able to write Boston the way that Robert B. Parker wrote Boston? And how are you going to be able to capture Boston the way he did? And, my answer to that is, I want to have Boston. It's got to be a major figure in the book. It's got to be a main component of the novels, but not just the Boston that Mr. Parker knew, but you got to know Boston as it's evolving. And that was always a key element in his novels, is Boston as it changes and as it grows and as things happen and as major events happen, as we've seen in the last few weeks, and how that changes the city and changes the feel of the city. I mean, one of his, just shortly, some of the go-to restaurants that were, mainstays in the series, like Lockober, Casablanca, those places have closed and, job, and I come to this as a former journalist, and I want to make sure I get it right, and to keep on the pulse of Boston. So that's extremely important to me. And so anyway, the way that this all came about as far as Wonderland is it's the casinos. It's been voted, it's been decided, casinos are going to be opening in Massachusetts.
Wow.
And there's three major casino licenses that are going to be awarded, and one of them is going to be close to downtown Boston. And as somebody who follows the city very closely, sees how things are changing and evolving, I said, gosh, I mean, I know Parker would have been all over this, you know, to have a big casino coming into downtown Boston. I mean, this was a Parker book. And so I looked at some of the different sites that they had been, you know, thinking about. There was the old Suffolk Downs horse racing track. There were some other parcels that were in East Boston. And then there's a little bit mentioned about the possibility, this was a couple of years ago, about the old Wonderland dog track, and which is closed, and it's in Revere, Mass. And there's so much of a storied history with this place that I really kind of fell in love with it. Before it was a dog track, it had been this amusement park in the 1908, 1909, and it was this park that really kind of influenced Walt Disney into his vision of what Disney World would become, and it was this fantastical place, you know, filled with all these rides, and it even had this crazy thing where they would set a city on fire, and you could watch a firefighters come out and put the blaze out, and they had rides and games and trips to the Himalayas, and so, and then it became a dog track in the 30s and 40s, and became a dog track up until about 10 years ago, and it's kind of a really sad, rundown place, and kind of a creepy place now, because the elements have taken it back over, but just the name Wonderland, I thought was, God, that's Robert Parker. That was Robert Parker all over it, and so that's how it came about.
Yeah, you really do a good job of that. I mean, and like you said, it's difficult. It's not easy. I mean, you sit down and write a book, and I always thought to myself, I can come up with ideas, but to actually sit down and write the words and make it sound really, really good is not an easy thing to do. I mean, there's so much involved with writing a novel. I mean, what words do I use? How long is the book? What are the characters like? And you have to flesh out the characters, too.
And of course, there's an additional component on that, which is not just as an author I'm doing this, but I'm doing this as Mr. Parker would address it. So I'm not only just thinking about this as how do I address it, I'm really thinking about how someone else, you know, how would someone else address this, and how do I get this in the proper voice. But I will say this, as tough as it is, and it is tough, and it's like, you know, building a ship in a bottle with the very specific, very organized way that Parker wrote. But I will say it's a great joy doing this. I've got a couple weeks off between the time Wonderland comes out and my series, which is a new novel called The Broken Places. Yeah. And I can't wait till, you know, sit down and find out what's going to happen next with the new Spencer book. I mean, I'm a fan, and I love this character. And then to be able to continue this series and work for the Parker family has just been, you know, really a dream come true. It's been a huge honor.
Now, did you be honest? Did you ever, in a million years, think that you would be doing this thing? I mean, did you ever think, well, if something happens to Robert Parker, maybe they'll let me take over? Did that ever cross your mind?
I think that you know, Joan Parker said it best. Somebody said something about, you know, was it ever considered, you know, if something happened to she had spoken to her husband, would, you know, did he ever mention that if something happened to him, would someone continue, or what would happen? And she said something like, you know, we all assumed that he would be, you know, he promised to live to 100 years. And I think that as a fan and as a reader, I couldn't imagine a year without a Robert B. Parker book. I mean, this has been such a part of my life for, you know, 25, 30 years, that it was just a perennial thing, the new Spencer book. And one of the great the wonderful things in my career was being able to be with Putnam, and so I could get that's his publisher, and getting an advanced copy of the new Spencer, the new Jesse Stone, was fantastic. So, you know, it was something that I just expected forever. I expected this to go on to forever and to always have that new book. And I had a phone call from a good friend of mine named David Thompson, who runs a mystery bookstore out in Houston, and he knew that I was a you know, rabid Robert B. Parker fan, and it was early, you know, in the morning, and he said, "Did you know Robert Parker died?" And it just, you know, I could not believe it. You know, I never could imagine such a towering figure would, you know, would leave. I mean, it's just something I thought he would write forever. And completely unrelated to this, long before any of this consideration to continue the series. series. I was finishing up a novel, and I dedicated it to Robert B. Parker because he had meant so much to my writing career and influencing my work.
Right, exactly. And Michael Conley says some really nice things about you. I think he calls you one of the best crime.
No, we make all that up. It's
you do.
You know, he doesn't know. He has no idea. You know, we just turn it in, and Mike Conley says nice things about you. So one day he'll find out. He'll find out. He'll say, "Who the hell is this guy? Ace Atkins using my name." But for right now, we can say it.
Now people are out there probably saying, "Why don't you ask him if he's ever met Robert B. Parker? Did you ever get to meet Robert Parker?"
I never did. I always wanted to, and I always thought that. He was a very private guy, but I thought sometime my book tour would land me in Boston and I'd be able to go get a beer with Robert Parker, which would have been just an incredible highlight of my career. And it never happened. We did correspond very, very early in my career, 15 years ago or so. He very graciously provided a blurb for my book, probably something I didn't deserve. But he was very gracious about it. I think it was because he knew that I had played college football and that I liked Westerns. I think that probably meant more to him. I don't even know if he'd read the book, but he gave me a really wonderful blurb, and it was greatly appreciated, and wrote me a couple of very, very, I think probably lengthy letters that were not true, you know, something that Robert Parker usually did not do, but never got to meet him, and I wish I had.
I did get to meet him the first time I met him was on his 70th birthday, and he came to the Barnes & Noble here in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, and I still remember him showing up. He was wearing sneakers, and, you know, it's funny, that's one of the images I have in my head of him wearing those sneakers. I thought, wow, here is a major book signing, he's wearing sneakers, you know?
Hey, he's Robert Parker, you know, you just do what you, you know, that's, I think everything that I've got to know him through friends, family, people that have met him, you know, that kind of thing, and getting a picture of the man. And I think he was I think Mr. Parker did what he wanted to do, which is a very admirable trait.
He was very sarcastic in person, too. I mean, very funny, with this dry sense of humor, this really dry sense of humor. And I remember when he was there, nobody knew it was his 70th birthday. He didn't tell anybody. So what we did is the lady at the store actually had him back the next year, and then we had the party the next year on his 71st birthday. But he didn't tell anybody. Here it was, his birthday, and nobody knew, you know?
Yeah, nice.
You would think with all the people there, somebody would have said, "And it's your birthday today."
But, well, one of the things that I never got to meet him, but strangely enough, my mother actually got to meet him. I was like such a Spencer fan. It was for my 21st birthday, and she asked me what I wanted for my birthday, and I said I wanted a signed Robert Parker. And I was at college at Auburn University, and my mother was living in Atlanta. And she waited in line at the bookstore there in Atlanta, and I think she waited for 45 minutes or an hour and got up to get a book signed for me for my 21st birthday. And as he was signing the book, she asked who it was for, and she said, "My son, Ace." And he just looked up, and he said, "Ace." He said, "That's my nickname." And he said, "I was always Ace Parker growing up."
Really?
Yeah, and he was Ace. Mr. Parker was Ace pretty much his whole life up until the last, I think, 15 years when he decided just to go by Bob. But he was Ace to Joan and to his very close friends, and that was a nickname he'd had his whole life. And in a strange twist, he was nicknamed for a famous football player from the 1940s, a guy named Ace Parker. And a really strange connection is Ace Parker was a personal friend of my father's. So it's just all kind of
that's interesting.
A strange connection in this world.
His family must have thought Ace Atkins, how perfect, because that's what his nickname was. That must have been some.
Joan has said that. Yeah, Joan has definitely that coincidence has not been lost on the family.
It's amazing. There's those kind of coincidences in life. We come across the, you know, people. I have people all the time that tell me they have family from Pennsylvania. It's like everybody's related to Pennsylvanians somehow in their families, and it amazes me when I talk to people. You know, how there's some kind of relation there. And it's weird how you can start talking to somebody and find out you have something in common with them you didn't even know.
Yeah, absolutely.
What makes you such a good writer? I mean, what makes you...
That's a question I always love getting. That's a great question. In fact, did you get that? I think I emailed that before we got on the air. What makes you such a good writer? I don't know. no, you know, it's not up to the writer to judge the quality of their work. That's for readers to judge it. I can tell you, I'm a hardworking writer, and I'm a dedicated writer, and it's something that I take very seriously, and it's something that I work at every day, and it's something I've been doing for, you know, 20 years professionally, and it's something that I think that really what I'm most proud of as far as being able to develop and, you know, when I would really say that I became a professional writer was through being a newspaper reporter, and I would not take that experience for anything in the world. I would not go to a MFA program and go through, you know, that kind of stuff. I would not go through the academic channels. For me, it was really about working every day at a daily newspaper, and I worked down at briefly for the St. Pete Times, and then for an extended period as a staff writer for the Tampa Tribune, and it was just terrific, terrific training. And so it's instilled a lot of habits of how I work, and there's little preciousness as far as my attention to writing. It is a job, but a job that I really love.
And I must, and having that deadline every day, or I guess you had, I don't know if you had a column every day, but you had to come up with ideas all the time. So that was good training as far as coming up with an idea for the next novel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, it's just deadline pressure, and it's something that every day, you know, you would have one major story, you might have two stories. Sometimes you're working three stories at the same time, and you're answering phone calls. And I will say that working as a novelist is never as tough as my average day on the daily newspaper beat, and so it's a lot more relaxing. But it's perfect training. It's something that you know, I don't think exists anymore today. You know, being a young person getting out of college, wanting to become a novelist, wanting to become a professional writer, that entry path of working for that daily newspaper to, you know, there's just not that many jobs left anymore, and it's a shame. And I you know, realized in hindsight that I was at in the very last 10 years of a great, long, and proud tradition, but it's not there anymore. It's not the same.
Do you think that the difference between a mediocre writer and a really good writer is the hard work? Do you think that has a lot to do with it? Or is it more of the training? Is it more of going to school and learning how to do it? Or what is it?
I think that can be anything. I mean, it just depends on the individual writer. I think that the hard work and the revision process, being able to work as far as being self-critical and not loving everything that you do, and being able to and I think the other thing that I really think that it boils down to one thing is just having passion for it and loving it. And I meet a lot of people, and lately I think that the publishing business has changed so much, where a lot of people, you know, will write their own books and, you know, and push books and that kind of stuff. But so many people that I meet, not all, but many people, they don't have a passion for a love of the books and for storytelling. I think a lot of people want to become an author. They want to say that they've written a book and they whatever, but they're not really, they don't love it. And it really starts with a love and a passion for books and for storytelling. And again, before I became a writer, before I got into a newspaper reporter, I loved books, and I loved Spencer novels, and I loved Elmore Leonard, and I loved Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, and I could not read enough of it. I could not wait. I could not read. There was not enough. You know, Parker could not publish fast enough to read the next one, and I think that's the core, the fundamental thing as far as becoming a good writer is a love and passion for books.
It's interesting, because I work with a lot of men at my job, and I look around, and I'm one of the few people that does read, but I was walking past this booth where they work on helicopters, and there's these two people sitting reading, and I don't know whether they were a couple or whatever, but it's so nice to see people reading. I mean, and we don't see it. You don't see it all, you know, as much as you would think you would. I mean,
you know, you do appreciate that when you see people, you know, and I think that's the, you know, I don't want to get off on that sidetrack, which seems to be everyone talking about digital publishing and what that means, that kind of stuff. But in some ways, I think that has made people read more. I see more people carrying devices on the plane and traveling with that stuff and picking up books. And it's nice to see. And it's nice, you know, you talk about men. You know, the popular wisdom in New York and publishing circles is that men simply do not read books. And, you know, it's really even books that you're writing that you feel are written more towards a male audience are really written for women. And I think men need to, get beyond ESPN and get beyond sitting around the water cooler and talking about their golf game, or, you know, is pick up a book. And I think that, you know, part of it may be the low attention span that we have in this country, but it's always wonderful to see somebody picking up a book and reading it. It doesn't matter what it is, but just people reading, I think it can only make them better citizens, I think.
I think what really, and if I had to say, and I have four brothers, but I'm the only one of us that really reads books. I mean, they read newspapers and look at pictures, but not to make them sound simplistic, but, you know, I love the book. I love being immersed in a book that I'm really enjoying, and I'm wondering where it's going to go, and I love that feeling of accomplishment when I'm done the book, and I'm like, wow, now I can really think about this book and really savor that joy that I had of reading it.
Absolutely, and I feel for those people who don't, you know, they don't get that feeling, but it's wonderful. And I think the digital stuff is wonderful, and I think for some people it really works. But there is something very special about going into your corner bookstore and picking up that new novel and the feel of that book in your hand and the relationship you have with that book for the week or two that you're reading it, and then you put it on the shelf and the feeling of accomplishment, and if people have an experience, it's hard to explain it to somebody, but I think it's a big part of my life.
Now, Henry, is it Simoli? Is that his name?
Yep, Henry Simoli.
Is he going to be back, do you think?
Henry, Henry's one of those stock characters from
like
novels, and Henry is fantastic. He's a gruff old boxing trainer who years ago had helped train both Hawk and Spencer, really a father figure, I think, to both of them, and somebody who has always played a role in the books, but usually a minor role. He was a guy that, when nobody really knows where Hawk lives, and, you know, I don't even know where Hawk lives, and, you know, he's hard to get in touch with, but Henry can always find Hawk. He can always get a message to Hawk, and that's always the way it's been.
Now, how many books has Henry been in? You know?
Since the beginning.
Wow.
And so Henry... that's the gym where Spencer trains and where Hawk trains, and we're told by Mr. Parker that years ago it had been a straight boxing gym and Henry had been a boxing trainer, and that over the years it's become more upscale and it's become kind of a trendy gym, and there's, you know, the women clientele doing, you know, Pilates classes and that kind of stuff, but he always keeps a back room for Spencer and Hawk for them to box from back in the old days, and he'd always have, you know, in the book maybe one scene with Henry Simoli, and it was always a great scene. But I thought about for this book, I was like, you know, we never really had a book with Henry as a major character, and I'd always loved Henry. And so that was another component going into Wonderland, as I wanted to make this book Henry's book, and I wanted to make this book about Henry. And he was such a major player, and he was the guy that also helped in Six Kill kind of rehabilitate Z. He was a major part in helping Spencer build him up and get him from where he had been addicted to alcohol and drugs and that kind of thing. He was a major figure in this, and so I wanted to make this Henry's book, and of course that's the entry point of, you know, there's always an entry point in a Spencer novel, and this starts off with Henry, longtime friend, very good friend, very close to Spencer, saying, I have some guys giving me trouble, and I need some help. And it's as easy as that, and off we begin in Wonderland.
The art of intimidation. You know, I always thought to myself, I put myself in Henry's place, like, what would I do if somebody was threatening me, and I really loved where I lived, and they were threatening to kill me if I didn't leave. What would I do? I mean,
yeah.
We all think
hopefully you would be lucky enough to have a buddy like Spencer.
Exactly.
Because <You know? laughs> nobody intimidates Spencer. Nobody, you know, that's the, you have Spencer as your buddy, then the bad guys don't stand a chance. But you have a gym where Spencer and Hawk work out, and now you have Six Kill coming to the fold as a protege, and Henry knew he was on safe ground.
Right. And I can hear everybody at home saying, ask him if his real name is Ace Atkins. Is that his real name? It sounds like a made-up name.
Like Mr. Parker, it's a nickname, but it's been my nickname my whole life. I've always been Ace Atkins, and it was my father's name. My father was a professional athlete, played in the NFL, and he was Ace Atkins, and so when I was born, I was Ace, and so that's the only name I've ever known.
It stuck. It completely stuck. It was there, and it just stuck. Now, you live in an old, a historic farmhouse, is that true?
Yeah, I live, there's an old farm outside Oxford, Mississippi, and I've been there for about 10 or 12 years, and months. But then, of course, writing my own books that are set here in North Mississippi. It's fun because the research and the components to make those characters and that world tick are right in my backyard. And so if I need to do research, I can just drive right down the road and get a sense of that place. But they're very, you know, like I said, they're very stylistically different from the Spencer novels and different from Robert Parker. But there's a core that makes up those books that I think really has more of a link to the Robert B. Parker westerns and has that sense of the Old West, even though we're in the Deep South. And a lot of those, morals and the code that men live by and the violence and the alliances and that type of thing is something I think it probably came hardwired to my brain from Robert B. Parker.
Right. Now, do you have children?
I do. I have two kids.
Two kids. And so they're a distraction for your writing, too, I guess.
Well, hence I have an office outside my home. And so that really is a wonderful thing, is to be able to, and I do, again, going back to my newspaper days, is this is my profession. And I'm extremely fortunate to be able to do this as my full-time job. And I've been doing this now professionally full-time for 11, 12 years. And so there's not a day when I can have preciousness of my writing. It's every day that I'm working. And so every day I get up and I go to the office and here in Oxford, Mississippi, and get down and get a cup of coffee and start to work. And it's, again, what a joy it is to not only be able to tell my own stories, but to continue the life of, my favorite character.
Right, exactly. I wonder what it's like for the wife of the writer, what she goes through, what your wife goes through. I mean, when you're writing a lot. I mean, let's face it, it's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of solidarity, and she can't always be around you. So how is that for her?
Well, I always tell Joan Parker, who is become a terrific friend, I said that I'm never getting Joan and my wife together over drinks, because I imagine they would have much to discuss and much to possibly complain about and form I think there's a lot of similarities between Bob and I as far as our our work habits and what we go through and that kind of thing. But the good thing, and I think the wonderful thing for both of us, is that, when you're finished for the day, you're finished for the day, and that's a nice thing to have. And, you do have the freedom of, after the afternoon, is, unlike being a newspaper reporter, is that I can go home and spend time with my family. And that's one of the great side effects of being a writer, is having that evening free.
Well, what happens if, I have so many questions, I love having these questions in my head. What happens if at the end of the day you're really starting to get it good and things are really flowing together? Do you continue or do you still stop?
I always have a certain amount of pages that I'm working on, and when I meet that number of pages, I'm done for the day. And so, I think Hemingway said one time is, that's really where you want to stop for the day, is when things are getting really good. So I never rush a book. I never try to finish things quickly. I'm very methodical about my work. So as long as but I will stay late if I don't reach that amount of pages mm-hmm. for the day, or that workload. I have a quota that I must reach every day, and if I don't, then it's I must stay. I've got to stay late. I'm my own boss, and I'm a tough boss.
It's interesting. When you read books, sometimes you think to yourself, well, I wonder if authors get into it to make money, or do they get into it because they really love to write? I mean, and there's got to be some authors out there who are only trying to make money. But, I mean, a lot of authors don't make a ton of money doing what they do. I mean, it's...
Well, I can't imagine any sane person getting into this business to make money as far as being a lucrative profession. I mean, you truly would have to be insane. I mean, I imagine there's some big commercial authors who are very vocal about it. And I think they may have been very lucky and fortunate to get that payday if that's all they were into it for. But I mean, there's a lot of other professions I could have gotten into as being sure bets to make money. I mean, it's not, being an author is not top of the list. I think I could have done a lot of other jobs getting out of college in the business world that would have been much more of a guaranteed payday. But if you don't do it because you love it, then you don't need to be in this business.
I mean, a perfect example is Stephen King, who could have stopped writing years ago and still continues to write. So you know he's got to love what he's doing. I mean, why would you keep doing it? It's a lot of hard work and a lot of thought, and the revising of a book, and you know, doing the first, second, third, fourth. I don't know how many drafts you do on each book, but I imagine it's a number of them. But that's got to be tedious at some point, does it?
You know, but you love it, and it's fun, and you know, you have that sense of accomplishment, which we spoke to, when you finish a book, when you finish reading a book, and you put it on the shelf, and you know, it's 20-fold when you finish telling a story, and you finish the book, and then it gets into production, and you see it in the typeset pages, and that's really where it starts becoming a real book, and you see the production and the graphic designers working on the cover, and you see the book, and then finally it's bound, and the process is very addictive. I have a great love for it.
And the wonderful thing about Wonderland, I didn't mean that as a pun, but it sounded that way anyway, is when I got to the end of it, all I could think of was, I can't wait to read the next one, to see what happens next to Spencer. It's sort of like when I was a kid, when I was reading Nancy Drew, I couldn't wait for the next adventure. It's that adventure, that adventure feeling that we feel when we're reading these books.
That's nice. You know, that's the author has, you know, for me, it's the same feeling as, you know, when I finished Wonderland, it was, this is great. This is, you know, a great process. This is great fun for me, but I can't wait for the next one. And I think, again, that's a tribute to the, you know, the very high bar that Parker set for these books. And that's why they've been so successful since 1974. And that's why Spencer continues. And what a, you know, geez, I mean, there's so many authors out there. There's so many books. There's so many thrillers. But how many authors leave this world with the fans saying, don't take your characters with you. We love your characters too much. Please let them continue. Now, that's what a tribute that is to the author.
That means it'll be the 40th year of Spencer next year. Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I guess they'll be doing something
for
that.
I need to notify Putnam Marketing Campaign. That's exactly, 40 years.
40 years.
That's right, yeah.
That means you get a 40% pay raise, right?
Yeah, right, for sure, yeah. I'll notify them that as well.
But that's such a great feeling. I mean, when we read a book and we read a series, we want to see what happens next. That's the thing. It's like watching a TV show, too. You want to see what happens next week. The only problem with TV is the TV tends to be repetitive in some ways, in a lot of ways, for me anyway. But at the same time, if there's a story, like Game of Thrones, there's a story each week, and the story builds, and he's telling a story, which is what I love. That's what I love about cable TV shows. You know, they have stories. It's not just, you know, there's a crime and they solve the crime every week, you know.
And we're working right now as far as there's a new Spencer TV show that's in development right now that I'm
really
a part of, that I'm actually writing the pilot episode for. And I would love to see Spencer back, and where this would be much more of a cable show. So there's things that we can do in this show that we've never been able to be, that could never have been done on you know, ABC and the Spencer for Hire days. And really, what I hope the show will become is something that is very Robert B. Parker, and that's I want to see it kept intact from the original vision of the books.
Do you have any idea when we're going to see it on the air?
Well, it's in the early development stages, as they say in the business. But we have some wonderful people who are working on it, producers and
who's going to play Spencer?
Directors. That's the question. Actually, I had a meeting yesterday discussing that very thing, and I wish we could clone Robert Mitchum. I think that's who I'd like to see.
I'm trying to think of an actor today who would embody that strength. And I mean, because Spencer's really not afraid of anybody.
I don't know. I cannot. Like I said, I had a meeting yesterday with the producer, and he was talking about talking to a casting director. But I the way I would honestly see it with Spencer is somebody we don't know and somebody we've never heard of. And, you know, you think about, like, John Hamm before Mad Men. You know, no one really knew John Hamm. But, I mean, you can't imagine that part without John Hamm as Draper and Mad Men. And I think that's the thing for Spencer. You're going to have to find an actor who is Spencer, as those embodies, that is a physically imposing guy, but he can act and he can be funny and he can do all these things. And I really don't know of anyone like that right now. And I would hate for them just to shoehorn in a, you know, a celebrity to make it work, but not have that, all those components that could be just a terrific Spencer. cancer.
Well, look what they did with Longmire. I mean, the guy who's playing Longmire is wonderful. I mean, it's
that guy. That's funny you say that. I was just thinking about that. I can't remember the actor's name. Who's Australian?
I think it's Robert Taylor. Is that his name, right?
That's right, Robert Taylor.
Not the original Robert Taylor.
But he is. I can't imagine more perfect casting, and I love that show. But that's exactly that type of thing. Exactly that type of thing. You know, maybe a good Aussie could be a great Spencer.
You know who they could get to play Hawk? I think, although he'll never do it. His nickname's The Rock. Wasn't he a wrestler or something?
Yeah, Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, Dwayne Johnson. He would be great as Hawk, but, I mean, they'll never be able to afford him, I'm sure.
There's a younger actor, he's 40, and he would be about right to play Hawk, I think, who is a former pro football player, but a good actor, a guy named Terry Crews, and he has the shaved head, but he also has a kind of a very menacing demeanor, you believe. I mean, he is a tough guy in real life. He really is a tough guy, former NFL defensive end and that kind of thing, and I think he could be Hawk. He could be terrific.
Do you have time to have any hobbies at all besides reading? I mean, you have two kids, but...
That's it. I think that's it. Work and, but that is my job, is my hobby. So how fortunate I am every day to sit down at my hobby and get paid for it. It's a terrific, terrific job to have, but I'm a big music fan. I love music. I love jazz. I love all types of music, blues and country. So, and I'm really, really into classic film as well.
Yeah, you do mention somebody, a musician in this book, and I can't remember who it is now. And I thought, I'd never heard of that person. Who is that? And you mentioned as one of the greatest, and I can't remember who it was now, in Wonderland.
Well, there's usually so much written in the Spencer books that Parker would talk about as far as classic jazz, especially in the earlier books. There was a lot of classic jazz mentioned in the earlier books. Later, it became kind of more of the, the Great American Songbook and, Cole Porter and that type thing that he would always throw in references about. But early in the books, he would talk a lot about Chet Baker and Jerry Mulligan. And, when I listen to that music, it sounds like Spencer.
Exactly. Yeah. And do you actually listen to this music when you're writing? Does that help your writing?
I listen to the music during the writing process or during the production of a novel, but I don't really listen to it while I'm writing. I usually kind of, like the silence and the attention. Sometimes if I'm listening to music, it can take my concentration away to a certain extent. But I am listening to that music constantly while in the production of that book.
I find music very calming to me. I think if I were a writer, I would definitely be listening to it. This is going to sound weird, but I love 70s music. I don't know. There's something about 70s music that always calms me down, that always makes me feel good.
Yeah, jazz has that kind of effect for me, listening to, Chet Baker, or listening to Coltrane. Have that very calming effect on me, and I think jazz is a very Spencer score, I don't think it would work if I was listening to speed metal, I think that would have the same effect on me, but listening to jazz certainly gets me in the mood to write that type of Robert Parker prose.
Do you have a title in mind for the next Spencer book at all?
I do, but I can't say it, and the reason why is because it's got to go through all the processes as far as, the marketing department and the editor, and we'll see if it stands, but I think it's a pretty good title.
Does the publishing company, when you first tell them the title, do they know right away whether it's a good title?
Pretty much, yeah, and I've been fortunate the last two titles were titles that were on the book. Lullaby was my title, and Wonderland was a title, but I mean, Wonderland is, time-tested, pretty good title. There's a discussion about how that book's going to be marketed and how it's going to be called and that kind of stuff, which is out of my hands, but I try to come up with the best title I can.
Well, maybe when you're finished, you could slip me a copy in the mail. Boy, I can't wait to read it.
You got it. Yeah. Might be probably the end of this year, probably.
As a fan, it's so much of a thrill to see a novel before it's published. I mean, that...
Oh, yeah. It's for me, too. It's for me, too. I just got the copy of the new Carl Hiaasen, which is to come out to late June, and I'm a big Carl Hiaasen fan, and how great that is, and that's one of the perks of the business is you can get those early editions and read them before anybody, and I'm a big James Lee Burke fan, and I'm trying to get a copy of hopefully get the copy of The Galley before the new Burke book comes out.
Yeah. He's got to be a character. I mean, I've met him in person. He's such a character. I mean, I remember when I saw him at the bookstore, I thought, this man acts like he's drunk. And I think he was just, that's just his mannerisms, and sometimes...
I've never met work. I know people who know him, but I've never met him. But I just admire his work a lot.
Right. I mean, you're making me want to interview him now. I'm going to have to look into interviewing him, and also Carl Hiaasen too. So it's like
Hiaasen is just one of the best satirists there is.
And he's writing kids' books now too. And I thought, I hope he writes another adult novel at some point. I guess it's always in you when you write adult novels. You can't just stop writing them. I mean, you just have to keep writing, unless like Harper Lee. But you know, when most people, when they start it, they got to keep going.
Yeah, and like we're talking about, it's a very addictive process. And if you love it, you just want to keep on doing it.
Well, this has been wonderful. We could talk all day. There's so much to talk about. But, you know.
Well, greatly, greatly enjoyed, David. It's always a pleasure.
It is for me, too. And the book is Robert B. Parker's Wonderland, written by Ace Atkins. He's taking up the series after Robert Parker's death. And it's out from Putnam and all your bookstores now. And I'm sure it's an audio and an e-book and everything.
It is in all formats.
You're doing a great job, and keep up that good work.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you. And we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.